The Sea Grant Files, fresh news about fresh water.
Hi, I'm Jesse Schomburg, and you're listening to the Sea Grant Files. Today I'm here in the KUMD studio on the University of Minnesota Duluth campus with Dr. Karen Gran. She's a fluvial geomorphologist, which means she studies how rivers and stream beds change over time. She's also an associate professor in UMD's Swenson College of Science and Engineering. I've invited Dr. Gran here today to talk about the power of water. Thanks for joining me on the Sea Grant Files, Karen.
Thanks very much for having me, Jesse.
So here's a question I have. I know a lot of folks in this area enjoy swimming in the deep holes in some of our streams. You know, some of them are quite deep, 10-plus feet deep sometimes. Explain how these holes are actually created. How are they formed in these streams?
Well, sure. There's many reasons why rivers carve deep holes. Some of them are just pools that form in river gravels. They form on the outside of bends. They form sort of at a plunge below boulder steps. But we can also get scour holes that form in bedrock. And those are a lot of the ones that people really like to go swimming in. Sometimes those are plunge pools at the bottom of bedrock waterfalls. But you can also get areas where you get currents that essentially drive rocks around and around and around and scour the bedrock that way as well.
So we've been talking about currents and in their capacity to scour out these holes. Are there other things that make rivers even more dangerous, like after a lot of rain events?
Well, yeah, one thing to keep in mind is that as the rivers come up, so as the flows get higher and higher during these rain events, the river's not just getting deeper, it's also getting a lot faster. And so those big storms, the big floods, are carrying water at great velocity downstream. But they're not just carrying water, they're carrying gravel, they're carrying boulders, and around here they're also carrying trees, sticks, branches, etc. So there's a lot of material moving very quickly down our rivers during floods.
It's not a good place to be.
No.
So some of this may seem obvious, but is there a way people can recognize when a river may have dangerous currents?
You know, the rule of thumb around here in Duluth, because our rivers do come up so fast, they're known as very flashy storms. So when it starts to rain heavily, the rivers can actually rise very quickly. So in general, if it's been raining heavily, or if you see the rivers look higher than they were yesterday or higher than they normally are when you go swimming, don't go in the river. I don't think it's a matter of trying to figure out when the currents are safe, but simply recognizing that the river's probably faster than you expect, and that particularly in these deep holes where people like to go swimming, you can also get currents that drag people under. And so during flood events, I would just say just stay out of the river. You can watch them. They're beautiful to watch. They're powerful. They're amazing. But don't go in them.
Pretty good advice. People listening to this broadcast might remember the Solstice flood in June of 2012 and the blowdown of 2016 and the flood in that same year that ripped Saxon Harbor apart. And, of course, there are the tragic results of storms in 2017 that led to rip current deaths on Park Point and a drowning in the Lester River. These deaths, all of the destruction, and Sea Grant's commitment to water safety made me think it was essential to talk about the power of water on the Sea Grant Files. During the Solstice flood of 2012, Duluth received more than 7 inches of rain over a span of 3 days. The high waters washed a seal out of the zoo and into the street, a child through a storm drain. Some damages still persist almost 6 years later, despite the hundreds of millions of dollars in relief aid. After the 2012 flood, Karen, you took students out to measure damages. Can you describe the power of water during an event like that?
Yeah, the damage from that event was impressive and far-reaching. The rivers were running high and fast. They carried gravel, boulders, trees downstream. A lot of the bridges and culverts weren't designed to carry that much water, and many of them weren't designed to pass the trees at all, and so trees got all piled up. It caused a lot of damage to infrastructure. One extreme example that I'll give comes from Jay Cook State Park. I had the opportunity to take my students out there after the flood to document what happened downstream of Four Bay Lake. So for those who've been to Jay Cook State Park before, you might know that Thompson Dam is there, damming up the St. Louis River. The water is diverted from the Thompson Reservoir into Four Bay Lake and then into the Minnesota Power Hydro Plant. So Four Bay Lake actually sits up at the top of a hill. And during the flood, the levee breached. There was too much water coming in. The levee broke and it sent a wall of water down the hill slope back into the St. Louis River at the bottom. Along the way, it backed up behind Highway 210 and then blew that section of the highway out. And we got a chance to go out and see what had happened after the flood and after this levee breach. And I will say the force of the water there, it stripped the bark off of trees 12 feet high. It stripped all of the topsoil off. It left tree roots just sort of hanging on, you know, clay soils beneath the topsoil. It carved large scour holes in the hillside. It carved a canyon running down the hillside that hadn't been there before. And that was where I saw the rock the size of my kitchen table that had been basically thrown down the hillside. It was impressive and amazing to see what the water had done to that landscape.
Often there is a human component that has played out over a landscape that worsens the effects of these large rainfalls. How communities have paved, roofed, and mowed their watersheds can reduce the surface area for water to be absorbed into the ground. The water has nowhere to go, so it builds up and causes flooding in communities. Sea Grant is interested in mitigating the effects of storms by working with others to install rain gardens and rain barrels, swales, and other practices which reduce runoff. These installments can't compete with the power of water after a storm such as the one in 2012, but they do help to slow stormwater runoff in general. I'm talking to fluvial geomorphologist Dr. Karen Gran about the power of water. Karen, before we say goodbye, could you leave our listeners with some thoughts about the power of water?
Well, I think the most important thing is that we all need to respect the power of our streams during floods and basically stay out of them during these big events. Keep in mind that the power of the streams here in Duluth actually increases as you go close to the shore. It gets steeper and you get more water moving through there. And I also think as we build new stream crossings, we can remember that big floods don't just move water, they also move sediment and they move large wood. And we can design for that whenever possible. So it will make our infrastructure more resilient going into the future and give our rivers really the space they need to move around.
Thanks for joining us on the Sea Grant Files, Karen. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks so much for having me.
This episode of the Sea Grant Files was produced by Rachel Wachtler, Sharon Moen, Maya Jensen, KUMD, and me, Jesse Schomburg. For more information or to listen to more episodes of the Sea Grant Files, visit Minnesota Sea Grant at www.seagrant.umn.edu. You can also follow Minnesota Sea Grant on Facebook or Twitter. Thanks for listening.